Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in 1859 that Daniel Emmett introduced his song that about 2 years later became the Civil War song of the Confederacy. So which of the following Civil War songs was released today and became the song of the Confederacy? Was that A, I Wish I Was in Dixie's Land? Is it B, Ara Lee? Is it C, Battle Hymn of the Republic? Was it D, Tenting Tonight? Or was it E, The Bonnie Blue Flag? So which one of those was the song released on this very day back in 1859 that became the Confederate Civil War song? Question number two, it was on this very day back in 1999 that this famous rock band from Georgia, the Black Crows, performed in Knoxville, Tennessee. One of the concertgoers later sued the band for $385,000 in a claim that, what? A, he had suffered significant hearing loss at the show? B, she was thrown from the stage by the band's drummer? C, the lyrics to one of their songs included a banned swear word? Or D, the ticket prices were too low to allow for a reasonable profit for scalpers? So, why were they sued? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of April the 2nd. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1939, that Glenn Miller recorded his theme song, Moonlight Serenade, 1939, today. And it was 62 years ago today, 1959, that the BBC banned the Coasters song Charlie Brown because of the word spitball. The BBC reversed itself on the ban just 2 weeks later, 1959, today.
Dogwood start to bloom and the crickets hum their tune. That's usually about the time that I feel most alone. But the news has all been bad and the whole world seems so sad.
Luke Combs, 6 Feet Apart, introduces our country music news. It's entitled Luke Combs, A Voice That Resonates. This is written by Garth Brooks, and this is published in the Time magazine, March 8, 2021. In this age of self-promotion, Luke Combs is letting everybody else do the talking for him. That's big in country music, which is all about sincerity and humility. And despite his achievements, including winning Best Album at the 2020 Country Music Awards, Luke has both of these in spades. He realizes that being a star is not up to him. The people will confirm it. Everything Luke tries, from Brooks and Dunn to classic country, neoclassic country, and today's country, he sounds very much at home. He's a singer who, you can tell, is really comfortable. If I could pull him over and tell him one thing, it would be to just keep doing what he's doing. Just follow that music. What resonates with him will resonate with the audience, with me, with everybody who's listening. Box Fugue, BWV 998, played here on a Lutenwerk, introduces our classical music news. It's entitled Bach's Favorite Instrument You've Probably Never Heard Of, the long-lost Lautenwerk. This is published in NPR.org on the 25th of March, 2021. Morning Edition, Nita Ulaby. Could there be a more unloved, abject literary form than the press release? Inherently clammy and needy, press releases crowd the inboxes of busy reporters who find it all too easy to ignore. But ever so often, a press release shows up like this one from Early Music New York. It arrived with the swagger of a carnival barker. It was flashy, it was fun. An instrument you may never have heard before, the press release promised, and then in bright red text, Dong Sok Shin plays Bach's favorite forgotten instrument. Reader, I clicked. I simply couldn't resist. A press release suckered me into writing about the Lautenwerk, an instrument indeed new to me. I called the Dong Sok Shin, an accomplished keyboardist and a member of the Baroque ensemble Rebel, who specializes in the harpsichord, organ, and forte piano. Lautenwerks were equally popular in Johann Sebastian Bach day, Shin said. If he owned two of them, they couldn't have been that off the wall, he pointed out. Bach wrote a number of pieces specifically for the Lautenwerk, but these days, he said, those compositions are usually played on harpsichords. No Lautenwerk survived the 19th century. Picture extremely delicate harpsichords. In fact, Lautenwerks are alternatively called lute harpsichords. Their strings are made of guts, originally from sheep, like lutes, which gives Lautenwerks a warm, intimate tone distinct from brassy, metal-strung harpsichords. My editor, Steve Smith, was reminded of a quote from the late conductor Sir Thomas Beecham comparing the sound of harpsichords to, quote-unquote, two skeletons copulating on a tin roof in a thunderstorm. The gut has a different kind of ring. It's not as bright. The Lautenwerk can pull certain heartstrings, Shin said, with the authority of one who knows firsthand. The small handful of artisans currently making Lautenwerks are basically forensic musicologists, reconstructing instruments based on research and what they think Lautenwerks probably sounded like. Unlike a Steinway piano, there is no standardization to contemporary Lautenwerks. None of them really work the same way, Shin said. They're all different shapes and sizes. Shin is an early music maven, but he's also a fan of superhero movies, cartoon violence, Star Trek, and Star Wars. We love living life in excitement, he said, and we sometimes forget there are other things in life, too. Playing the Lautenwerk, he writes, is a path towards peace in trying times, made extra meaningful around Johann Sebastian Bach's birthday. The exact date is contested, but he would have been 336 years old in late March 2021. Bach's music played on a Lautenwerk is a gift any time you have a chance to hear it.
Say it's all right. Say it's all right. It's all right. Have a good time. 'Cause it's all right. Oh, it's all right.
John Batiste with Celeste covering It's All Right introduces our jazz music news. It's entitled Questions for John Batiste. Written by Hillary Hughes, Entertainment Weekly, April 2021. Between working on Pixar Soul and being bandleader for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, Batiste, 34, somehow found time to make and speak to us about his new album. First, your latest record, We Are, goes beyond your jazz roots by incorporating R&B, hip-hop, swing, and pop. How did it feel to embrace new genres? Well, it felt really natural. When you're younger, and also when you've become known for something, it's hard to feel confident enough to stray from your signature sound. You might lose the public, or you might not sound like yourself. But when you start to realize who you are as an artist and realize it's a myth, there is no genre or sense of categorizing music beyond the soul of a man or a woman. The record also nods to New Orleans culture, notably on Until, where black Indians sing Shoofly. Why was it important to include their voices? Well, if we're talking about what's going on in America today and the idea that we have to be this utopia where everybody is welcome, then what better example than the black Indian tradition of New Orleans, which is indigenous and enslaved people creating a culture that still exists today and is a part of the social fabric of the city. It's a real representation of what American life can be.
Everybody clap your hands. Give yourself a chance. 'Cause you've got so
Savior Complex introduces our music research and technology news. It's an article entitled, Move Over Vinyl, Cassette Tapes Are the New Old Thing to Love. This is written by Dan DeLuca, published in Philadelphia Inquirer on the 25th of March 2021. The vinyl resurgence has been keeping independent record stores alive for years, and it hit a milestone in 2020. Music fans spent more money on LPs than CDs last year for the first time since 1986. But the desire to possess an analog recording that you can actually hold in your hands in a streaming era where everything seems ephemeral isn't limited to records. It's now also about cassette tapes, which are making a comeback. U.S. cassette sales were up 33% last year. Part of the appeal? new tape releases are cheaper than new releases on vinyl. For example, the 2020 Punisher album by Phoebe Bridgers, the artist performing in the background now, sells for $23 on vinyl, whereas music stores, which have been expanding the cassette space in their racks, sell the cassette version for that release for just $10. The March 8, 2021 issue of Time magazine, by the way, notes that Phoebe Bridgers may not have known that the pandemic was coming when she released her Punisher album, but her ethereal voice has had a calming effect on our adjustment to the quarantine. The appeal of the cassette is its homemade quality. Anyone can make a cassette. The fragility of the medium and even the tape hiss is part of the aesthetic appeal. There's something satisfying about watching the wheels turn while you listen and knowing, I made this. When the medium's inventor, the Dutch engineer Lou Ottens, died this month at age 94, he was remembered internationally for creating the iconic object, which gave rise to the cherished mixtape. While it takes just minutes to put together a playlist on Spotify or Apple Music, making a cassette mix takes time and tender loving care. As Rolling Stone writer Rob Sheffield put it, love is a mixtape. But cassettes aren't just small business. The medium took a turn back into the mainstream with 2014's Guardians of the Galaxy, in which Chris Pratt's character listens to a mixtape of 70s hits on his Walkman. That's his only connection to his mother. That soundtrack mix was issued on cassette and became a hit, as have three recent volumes of soundtrack tapes from the Netflix series Stranger Things, in a sure sign that cassettes are a cool object of the moment. Hot cassette releases now include Taylor Swift's Evermore and Arcade Fire's score to the 2013 sci-fi movie Her. There's a coolness factor. The kids see Stranger Things and then they find a bag of cassettes in their parents' basement, and it starts from there. A lot of people, millennials, are really into thrifting, looking for clothing or anything old. That's a big part of the culture. Digging through racks of old tapes and excavating the past has made pandemic lockdowns less lonely. Sometimes even the empty case from a long-ago homemade mixtape can send one to Spotify to create a playlist. And that's happening more often right now. Kings of Leon's Beachside introduces our rock and pop music news. It's entitled Return of the Kings. After a four-year break, including a delay due to the COVID-19, Tennessee family band Kings of Leon are back with a brand new sound. This is written by Ruth Canning in Entertainment Weekly, April 2021 issue. For Kings of Leon frontman Caleb Followill, inspiration usually strikes around the same time, post-holidays, off the road, home in Nashville. It's just something funny that hits me, pushing me to do something, he tells EW. The feeling also surfaced in the fall of 2018 when the Tennessee Rockers, Caleb, his brothers, bassist Jared and drummer Nathan, and their cousin lead guitarist Matthew, began work on their eighth studio album, When You See Yourself. They finished in December 2019, and, well, we all know what happened next. We were polishing our shoes, ready to tour, and then it stopped, says Caleb. The band decided to wait to release the record, even though they'd already spent three times longer than usual making it. But as Caleb notes, we were happy to not listen to it for a while. When I went back, I was thinking, man, I hope I still enjoy it. Luckily, he did. After 20-plus years, 7 albums, and 4 Grammys, we were looking for a challenge. So they expanded their sound by working with older equipment, adding synthesizers to the mix, and leaving everything on the studio floor. I'd go home, and my wife would try to talk to me, but I'd need 30 minutes to just sit and stare at the wall, said Jared. Caleb jokes that during the recording process, he couldn't sleep through the night. I was shell-shocked. The guys were so focused on creating good music, they even forgot to adhere to the traditional rules of making a commercially viable record. We just made the songs as good as possible. We didn't think about radio or singles or anything like that, says Jared. Every song is almost 5 minutes long. Clocking in at almost about 4.5 is Golden Restless Age, a track about reaching a moment in life when, fittingly, time seems to stand still, and you're anxious to get out and live. What I'm saying is, don't take it for granted, Caleb explains. You're going to look back and go, wow, I had it so easy. I was looking for something in the future that is not as good as what I have right now. Perhaps that self-aware appreciation, mixed with just enough restlessness, is the key to their longevity. Bands with family almost never make it for a super long time, says Jared. There have been a few red flags, but it feels like we're at the best place we've ever been. So what's left to achieve? One good Pitchfork review, jokes Jared. Well, Caleb mentions, with trepidation, securing a spot in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That terrifies me, he said. Getting up and trying to give a speech, I wouldn't last 3 minutes before I started crying and had to get off the stage. In the meantime, K.O.L. will settle for getting on any stage to tour the new album, a thought that equally excites and panics them. There are so many places I can't wait to go, says Caleb, and it's not just play shows. Selfishly, I can't wait to go to some restaurants. For Jared, any travel sounds good. I cannot wait to be stuck in traffic, he says, or drink red wine and watch High Fidelity on a 10-hour flight with screaming babies. Now that's rock and roll. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our second question, it was on this very day back in 1999 that this famous rock band from Georgia, the Black Crowes, performed in Knoxville, Tennessee. One of the concertgoers later sued the band for $385,000 in a claim that what? A, he had suffered significant hearing loss at the show. B, she was thrown from the stage by the band's drummer. C, the lyrics to one of their songs included a band swear word. Or D, the ticket prices were too low to allow for a reasonable profit for scalpers. And the correct answer? Answer A, he had suffered significant hearing loss at the show. As noted in MTV.com on 4/5/2000 by Mark Woodleaf, an Ohio teenager and his parents claimed he suffered permanent hearing damage at a Black Crowes concert. His mother said her son's tinnitus had been diagnosed in his right ear and that he suffered from fluctuating hearing loss. As a parent, when you buy tickets, you don't expect your kids to come home with a permanent injury, she said. Parents need to know This is a possibility. And the answer to our first question, it was on this day back in 1859 that Daniel Emmett introduced his song about 2 years later became the Civil War song of the Confederacy. So which of the following Civil War songs was released today and became that song of the Confederacy? Is it A, I Wish I Was in Dixie's Land? Was it B, Aura Lee? Was it C, Battle Hymn of the Republic? D, Tenting Tonight? Or E, The Bonnie Blue Flag? Correct answer? Answer A, I Wish I Was in Dixie's Land. As noted in BalladofAmerica.org, although known as a Southern anthem, Dixie's Land, a.k.a. Dixie, was written for the minstrel stage by Daniel Decatur Emmett in New York City. The song was so popular in the South that it became generally accepted as the rallying song of the Confederacy. Abraham Lincoln loved the song since he first heard it at a show by the Rumsey and Newcomb Minstrels in Chicago in 1860. According to a fellow attorney who attended the show with him, after Dixie's Land was played, Lincoln clapped and shouted, "Let's have it again, let's have it again." With the end to the Civil War, which had lasted 4 years, seemingly in sight, President Lincoln gave his second inaugural address on March the 4th, 1865. The day before, Confederate Commander Robert E. Lee surrendered to Union General-in-Chief Ulysses S. Grant. Lincoln requested that a military band on board the River Queen play Dixie's Land, the song to which nearly all of the Southern attacks had been conducted. According to a French writer who accompanied him, Lincoln said, "That tune is now federal property, and it is good to show the rebels that, with us in power, they will be free to hear it again." So let's close out today's program with a song prominently featured in the Ken Burns documentary on the Civil War, A Shokin Farewell by fiddler Jay Unger. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is the language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1138. 1755. So long. Until next time.